This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American security policy is topping agendas on many fronts today. On Capitol Hill, civil libertarians on the right and left are protesting extension of portions of the Patriot Act. A filibuster has been threatened. At the White House, President Bush has agreed, after weeks of opposition, to support legislation from Senator John McCain that would ban American torture. And on the front page of the New York Times, news that the National Security Agency, with secret authorization from the president, has been tapping phones and email inside the U.S. for 3 years. Now comes the pushback. Up next on Point, common sense versus complacency as America recalibrates its post-9/11 security posture. Joining me now from Washington is Josh Meyer, national security correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Josh, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
We've got the Patriot Act under discussion right now on Capitol Hill. Can you bring us the latest? Where do things stand there, Josh?
Well, I mean, the highlights of the U.S. The House and Senate compromise legislation reauthorizing the Patriot Act would make permanent 14 of the 16 provisions in the Patriot Act that are scheduled to expire at the end of the year. And there's also a lot of horse trading going on in terms of what else it can do, whether it can expand certain things, whether it should pull back on certain things. A lot of that's happening in secret because, as we're learning, a lot of the stuff that's happening that, you know, that's coming out of the White House in terms of electronic surveillance is not exactly advertised or promoted. We just find out about it afterwards. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of all of this.
Now, you're referring there to the New York Times report today about National Security Agency domestic tapping that's gone on. We'll have to look at that. It's all part of the same ball of wax here.
Right.
But first, on the Patriot Act, Josh, what about the threat of a filibuster? Does it seem real? Is there bipartisan involvement in that? Is this a purely partisan lines issue?
It does appear to be more on partisan lines, and filibusters, it seems to me, rarely can be sustained long enough to work. But, you know, there are a lot of legitimate things in the proposed new Patriot Act that I think have some, there's some good things that they're trying to do. One of it is they're trying to track terrorists as they travel from one place to another, for instance, doing roving wiretaps on cell phones, which seems to me like a good idea because, you know, these guys are smart enough. They change the chip in the cell phone frequently. They pass along cell phones. They move from place to place. Some of the more controversial provisions, of course, include whether or not to do secret checks at libraries and so on.
What about opposition from the Republican camp? I mean, there have been civil libertarians, Cato Institute, and right on down that line also pushing back. Is that not evident in Republican congressmen, senators?
I think it is, Tom. And, I mean, one of the things you're seeing is there's a pendulum that swings back and forth on these issues. And, when it gets to the point where even some of the Republicans are pushing back on this, you can tell that the pendulum has probably reached, you know, one side as opposed to the other side, which was after 9/11. The thing you have to keep in mind, as a senior FBI official told me recently, is that, if there is a terrorist attack in the United States, which everybody assumes there's going to be, let's say a suicide bombing in a mall or something, the pendulum is going to swing, you know, dramatically back the other way. So it's only a matter of time before these things go from one end to another. So I think people are trying to sort of take a broader view now and get something in place that will anticipate that now.
Josh, take us. We understand that. Take us into this interplay on the NSA tapping. What exactly did the president secretly order, and what's been going on with it?
Well, it's actually a very good story. I mean, I covered this stuff very closely, and as the New York Times noted, some senior senators said they didn't even know that this was happening. The NSA, you know, is sort of the electronic vacuum cleaner up in space, and what they do is they vacuum up all of the email and phone conversations of terrorists and others to try to get a sense of what they're doing.
But traditionally, that was only abroad.
Right. That's what I was going to say. It's hard to say that there's boundaries anymore. I mean, you know, the United States obviously has borders, but a lot of the phone calls are going from overseas to the United States, from the United States back overseas and so on. And the NSA had been able to track phone calls originating overseas, even if they were going into the United States. What's different here is that they were tracking phone calls from the United States overseas, and that has a lot of people very uncomfortable.
Now, how often, how widely has this been done? Has it been done with American citizens?
Yes. I mean, according to the New York Times, several thousand American citizens. I think you're going to see a lot of interest in looking into this program to see exactly what they were doing. It's all under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is very, very secret. It's a sort of a secret chamber of judges that operates out of the Justice Department and decides what kind of warrants can be issued totally secret without letting the targets of the warrants know what's going on, so they can be under investigation without being told about it.
But when the NSA looked into telephone calls and emails originating in the United States, international phones, telephone calls, were judges involved? I thought this was a warrantless eavesdropping.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. In this case, these were warrantless, but there was notification at some level to senior people on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and also apparently with people in the Justice Department. So there were some people notified that this was taking place. It's just that they weren't getting warrants for it. So it's, you know, the question of who knew about this and who approved of it and whether there was any oversight, I think are things you're going to see coming into play now. I think senators are going to want to take a look at that and see what's happening. But yes, when it's a warrantless system like that, that troubles a lot of people.
Josh, you mentioned secret offstage deliberation in the Senate today. Does that mean the Patriot Act consideration is intertwined with this NSA activity?
Well, that was my sense. I mean, I got the sense that there were a lot of things over the last few weeks, actually, that the senators weren't talking about when they were discussing the Patriot Act, and they kept saying that they were concerned about certain things without articulating what they were, and I'm hearing that this was one of those, but that there could be others too. There's probably a lot going on that even those of us who follow this very closely don't know about.
There's talk of simply a 3-month extension in current Patriot Act provisions that would expire at the end of this year if nothing's done, so
right.
That the deliberation can go on. Do you have a sense of whether we're likely to see a definitive vote today, or this might be put off?
Well, you know, I would never want to guess what Congress is going to do. It's almost impossible to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard both ways. I mean, I've heard that it certainly would seem to be a thoughtful step to take 3 months and do more deliberation on it. But you know, but the flip side is they have had a lot of time to talk about this and think about it. I am wondering, you know, why the stuff about the NSA is coming out now. It just seems like it's intriguing timing. I noticed the New York Times said that they held the report last year. So you wonder why it's being inserted into the debate right now.
It sounds as though they've been sitting on it for a year. They've released it just as the Patriot Act debate gets to full boil in the Senate. They said also there are things they're still not reporting that they know out of respect for a White House request. Speaking of the White House, Josh, on the torture front, exactly what is this agreement that President Bush and John McCain have finally come to about American torture?
Well, excuse me, I think this is a huge win for John McCain. I mean, I think Bush essentially reversed position and endorsed the torture ban that McCain crafted, you know, after months of White House pressure and attempts to weaken the measure. I mean, Vice President Cheney in particular, was leading the charge against this, trying to put pressure on the CIA and others, saying that it would undermine the war on terrorism. The measure itself would seek to prohibit cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment of any detainee in U.S. custody anywhere in the world. And I think some of the supporters the opponents of McCain's bill said that you know, when you're overseas and the gloves are off, that's too broad of a protection.
Josh, but is this a distinction without a difference? We've already seen Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez talking about this, saying it's only severe interrogation, severe infliction of physical or mental harm. Is there still a debate over the definition of torture in McCain's win?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I spent some time in Israel a few years ago talking to people there about interrogation and torture, and I've spent a lot of time talking to people here. And, you know, it's almost impossible to determine what exactly is cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. I mean, one of the things that has been done over the years that is acceptable is making somebody sit on a stool for, like, days on end, and if they fall off, they make them get up and get back on the stool. It's essentially sleep deprivation. Or they'll hose you off and with cold water and put you in a freezing room until you're literally, you know, about to get, you know, freeze to death, and then they'll put you in a really hot room and go back and forth. So, you know, I don't think it's ever really been articulated exactly what is acceptable under any of these guidelines. But I think it's certainly significant that Bush has reversed course and backed the torture ban.
So here we are with the Patriot Act, the torture ban, and the NSA activity all in play just in this space of a couple of days here. You mentioned the pendulum swing, Josh.
Right.
How would you describe that swing right now? We're looking at whether the country, the authorities, are recalibrating what's appropriate, what's right, what's necessary in this security battle. Do you see the needle moving?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's swung now farther to the other side, as far to the other side as I've seen it since 9/11. I mean, it goes back and forth sometimes. If you noticed before the election, there were a lot of times when they would raise the remember the alert system, the color-coded alert system, which we haven't seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they kept raising that and going back and forth. But this seems to be a time of essentially relative quiet, at least in the United States, and the pendulum has swung to the point where I think the critics of this are pushing back with some success and trying to get you know, more emphasis on human rights and or civil rights and protection of civil liberties of Americans.
Josh Meyer, national security correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Josh, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
Let's get a sense of what the debate's been like on Capitol Hill. Here from yesterday is Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, speaking about and denouncing the Patriot Act.
It's not balanced. It's once again skewed against the rights of the individual.
And Senator John Kyle, Republican from Arizona, giving a harsh warning to his Senate colleagues about the possibility of a filibuster.
An attack occurs in this country, and it could have been prevented by the provisions of the Patriot Act. Then everyone who votes to support a filibuster will have to answer for that attack.
We're joined right now from New York by Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation magazine. She's been watching all this closely. Katrina Vandenhoevel, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And from Chicago by Eric Posner, a law professor at the University of Chicago. He's written opinion pieces in defense of the Patriot Act for the Wall Street Journal and other publications. Eric Posner, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, first to you. Do you see a kind of a shift in the tides here? On the one hand, you've got opposition to the Patriot Act, though this all may still be approved and go through before the end of the year. We don't know. You've got the deal on torture. On the other, the news that the NSA has been given this thoroughgoing freedom for surveillance that we hadn't known about before. So is the needle moving? Is the climate changing here?
I think it is, and I think it has been shifting under the radar in the last months. Let's not forget that we've seen an interesting transpartisan coalition of right and left emerging in opposition to key sections of the Patriot Act. I mean, over 400 state and local government bodies passed resolutions in the last year calling for revisions to the Patriot Act. You've seen the Bob Barrs of the world, conservatives, working with the ACLU, with civil liberties groups. But I think at the heart of this is, with the president backing down now and backing limits on the cruel, inhumane, degrading treatment of detainees, these are stinging defeats for an administration that at its essence has tried to accrue as much power in the executive branch and to be held unaccountable. I do think this is a sense of a country waking up to what has been done in their name, counterproductively in the name of security, and a kind of fear that we are degrading our own democracy through a metastasizing system of unprecedented secrecy, as I said, an executive which is operated with virtually no accountability and with a contempt for rule of law, which defines this nation. So I do think we're seeing a country waking up and a media slowly waking up. Today we have the extraordinary New York Times story, which they did sit on for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that that decision to move with the story has something to do with you know, no longer being intimidated by an administration which has used fear to keep the press at bay and to keep to try and roll back and delegitimize a media which should be asking tough questions and playing its role in holding an administration accountable.
Lots of questions out there in the last couple of months and maybe a change in the climate here. Eric Posner, you've been a strong defender of a number of these measures. Do you see, as Josh Meyer was saying earlier, as Katrina Vandenhoevel says here, a pendulum swing going on? And do you see it opening vulnerabilities in American security? Or is it, even from your view, is it time for that?
Well, it's very hard to understand what the public attitudes are and how they're changing. Mm-hmm. I think it's certainly plausible to think that attitudes have changed gradually. In fact, the Patriot Act has been quite controversial almost since its inception, and people have been criticizing it and debating about it for quite a long time now. I think since there haven't been any terrorist attacks on American soil since 9/11, people are probably feeling more secure, and that's not terribly surprising. Let me offer an alternative interpretation mm-hmm. of what might be happening, which has more to do with politics than public attitudes. The Bush administration has been weakened by a string of political defeats and problems such as the Katrina disaster and the Myers nomination and general Dissatisfaction with the Iraq War, and I think that because the Bush administration is weaker now, it's unable to resist political pressure to change in ways that I gather from the news reports it thinks is probably unwise.
Is this a weakening of American security? Therefore, is it a strengthening,
right.
appropriate strengthening, re-strengthening of civil liberties? How do you read it?
Well, it's hard to say. I think at this point, my view is that it's too soon to weaken these provisions in the Patriot Act, and I think it's probably too soon to relax these other sorts of security measures. That's not to say that in another few years, if al-Qaeda becomes weaker, if terrorist attacks overseas and in the United States became rarer, then at that point it might be sensible. But I think at this point, the general view is that al-Qaeda remains quite strong despite its partial defeat in Afghanistan. And as long as al-Qaeda remains a major threat to American security, I think it's unwise to weaken these measures.
Let me ask you...
I think there's a debate underway. I am not an expert, but those who follow al-Qaeda as to whether... It is growing in strength. I do think that what we see, and I think Professor Posner is right, we see a weakened administration. On the other hand, weakened by its own actions and weakened not only by incompetence, but by a kind of staggering overreach of its powers, which are now exposed not to have made this country any more secure. So you see a redefinition, possibly, of security, certainly after the hurricane, where people are wondering, what has this administration done in these last 4 or 5 years to make this nation more secure? It has chipped away at the core bedrock values and principles and laws of this country, and certainly on the torture issue. I mean, if we're going to prevail in the fight against terror, you do so by distinguishing yourself from the enemy. And terrorism is a moral evil. It's illegal. The Convention Against Torture, our own laws at home, the Army Field Manual, etc. And I think John McCain, most interestingly, you've seen people like John McCain speak out. You've seen Representative John Murtha speak out against the war, and you've seen conservatives speak out against abuses by this administration. So the fracturing of support is both a function of the weakening of this administration, but I think also a sense that this country has gone astray, which, to come back to Professor Posner's point, is clearly demonstrated in all the polls and not the figure showing President Bush is at the lowest point of any second-term president at this time, but in the fact that majority of Americans think the country is heading in the wrong direction. And I think all of what we're talking about this morning factors into that sense of losing the very soul of a country which has a strong democratic tradition, but even strong democracies can have those traditions eroded after time and under pressure of, quote, the new normal, which, if this is the new normal, get me out of here.
Let me ask you, Eric Posner, about that. There's the country's soul, there's the country's security, and there's a dance going on here. Katrina Vandenhoevel says, well, maybe al-Qaeda is stronger, maybe it's not, but I guess there's little question that international jihadist movement is stronger in Iraq now than it was before. Do you see these measures that you defend, do you see them, in spite of your defense, do you see them fundamentally as impingements on American liberties, that there should therefore be time limited? And if this is a long-term war, as we've often been told it will be, do they necessarily entail a perpetual diminution in American liberties?
Well, I think it all depends on the nature of the security threat. So American traditions are quite capacious. And if you go back through the full 200-year history of this country, you see this cycling. Whenever we're at peace, American liberties are fairly robust and well protected. When there's an emergency, either a war or some other kind of emergency, every time that happens, the new measures are passed that are quite restrictive, that impinge on civil liberties.
But they've often been looked back on with remorse.
Well, I don't think I think we do to some extent and not to other extent. There's always a great deal of breastfeeding after the fact. But people have recognized that if there's an emergency, it is absolutely necessary to reduce the level of civil liberties that exist during normal times. People think that often we've gone too far, but I don't think anybody, or at least any serious person, thinks that For example, liberties should be exactly the same or roughly the same during an emergency as during normal times.
And if there's a century-long war that's been alluded to by this White House, does that mean Americans could surrender liberties for a century without losing them permanently, Eric Posner?
Well, it's a matter of degree. So if there's a threat that goes on for a long time, then it's just a trade-off. If you think that cities are going to be blown up or lots of people are going to be killed, you have to ask yourself, well, what am I willing to give up in order to prevent this from happening? Now, we don't have to become a dictatorship in order to prevent that from happening, but it may be necessary, for example, to tolerate a greater degree of eavesdropping, to tolerate interrogation techniques that would otherwise not be necessary. We don't know when the war on terror will end. People said the same thing about the Cold War, that it would never end. It did end, and in fact, the heightened security measures that occurred during the Cold War did peter out in about 10 years after the Cold War began, 10 to 15 years.
And many of those were shown to be unnecessary, and this is not like the Cold War. This administration has tried to make this out to be like the fight against Soviet totalitarianism. Al-Qaeda does not have a geographic landmass. It is a different entity. I think that the danger of this argument about sort of we need to chip away at our civil liberties. We have on the books laws which will protect us. There may be some measures which need to be shifted, but I think what we're seeing in this recalibration, this new balance. Of course, there has to be a balance between security and liberty, which may be shifted a little in these times. But this is a war. This administration has told us a war without end. So we need to be very careful.
We've got the perspective, and we appreciate it. Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation magazine, thanks very much for being with us. Eric Posner, I wonder how you look at it. Do you see Americans as being lulled into complacency by the lack of an attack over the last – a major attack over these last years?
I just don't know. It's very hard, as I said earlier, to know what American public opinion is. I think if we look historically the problem for elected officials is there's always been this problem for elected officials, which is to arouse the public to concern about some kind of foreign threat. So Roosevelt had this problem before World War II. And then Truman had this problem during the Cold War when he had to persuade a traditionally isolationist public to support an incredible, unprecedented peacetime intervention in Europe in the form of the Marshall Plan and military commitments. This is a very difficult thing to do for the president to persuade people that they should make sacrifices for the sake of threats that just don't seem as visible as they once did.
We're joined right now from Cambridge, Massachusetts by Juliette Kayyem. She's a lecturer in public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, former member of the National Commission on Terrorism, co-editor of First to Arrive, State and Local Response to Terrorism. Juliette Kayyem, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
So give us your perspective. Is the needle moving? Is the national center of gravity on what's required in terms of security right now and liberties? Is it changing under our feet as we speak?
I think so. I mean, I think if you just look at the steady drumbeat of both political, public debate, even media sort of independence in going after some of these stories, I think what you're starting to see at the very least is questions about the legal philosophy animating the war on terror. Today, as we saw in the New York Times, a major story that the National Security Agency was authorized under executive order to basically survey, from what we can tell from the story, U.S. communications with no court orders. That's a huge story, and it suggests that while we're in the, you know, in the nitty-gritty details of the Patriot Act or the torture amendments, that this administration still, to this day, believes that the president has inherent executive authority to do a number of things where he basically doesn't need legislative authority to do them. And I think the debate about all of these different issues, torture, surveillance, the Patriot Act, has suggests that there's been at least an opening up of this recalibration so that people feel confident from both the left and the right to speak up without being called certain names, without being called sympathetic to terrorists, that we never saw even, you know, 2 years ago in the midst of, say, the war in Iraq. I think that's healthy. Where it lands, I do not know. We'll see what happens with the cloture debate today at 11 and whether the Patriot Act goes forward or whether we go back to the drawing board. But I mean, to me, you know, I read the story today in the New York Times mm-hmm. about the NSA and thought, here we are having a very healthy, open debate, wherever you fall on the political spectrum, about the Patriot Act, about what authorities we want our government to have with oversight, with judicial review. And then, lo and behold, right, we discover that the president, under, I have to say, very tenuous legal authority. He's arguing that the authorization for the use of military force in Afghanistan gave him the legal authority to do this, is, you know, doing what the NSA had been prohibited from doing for almost two decades. And that seems to me to just see, it seems so disingenuous at this stage of where we are in whatever you want to call it, the war on terror or whatever mm-hmm. else.
Julia, you've spoken to people being fed up with the so-called commander-in-chief
yeah.
perspective, the kind of high-handed use of executive power. On the other hand, you're very tuned into security issues and security problems. Do you see in this shift a handicapping of security efforts? Could we end up, more square with traditional liberties, but less ready to deal with security threats?
Well, the law is not a suicide mechanism. It's not insane. I mean, let's just look at the surveillance issue, right? The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which it looks like the administration bypassed in allowing the NSA to do the surveillance, mm-hmm. has emergency exceptions. During the millennium, it's well known from the September 11th commission report,
right.
During the millennium scare, Reno had a 2 a.m. meeting with the FISA judges, former Attorney General Janet Reno, mm-hmm. with the FISA judges, say, look, we're really nervous. I need to go forward.
These are the kind of behind-the-screen
exactly.
secret judges that keep an eye on things.
And the law provides for those kinds of mechanisms. And so it's not that the law sort of just stands out there and it's slow and unsteady and whatever else. And so
you're saying that President Bush didn't need to push all that aside, that there are already provisions in place that they could have observed even as they prosecuted threats.
Absolutely. I think even in the context of the nuclear ticking time bomb, which everyone brings up, why we don't want an anti-torture statute, right? Everyone sort of
yes.
says, well, what if the guy knows that there's
right.
a nuclear ticking
tick,
time
tick,
bomb?
Tick. Mm-hmm.
There's self-defense. There's the courts, if they were to look at this, take into account context. There's good faith defenses. There's all sorts of things that the law has taken into account that in national security issues, since we don't live in a dictatorship, that the law is flexible enough. And so what's disconcerting about the story today are a number of things mm-hmm. that have happened mm-hmm. with the administration is their sort of lack of faith in the law's flexibility. And so what we have is now all these debates saying, let's try to get this right at least this time around 4 years later.
Eric Posner, what about Juliet Kime's point that the law is flexible enough to underline American security without this kind of what some are now seeing as a high-handed override? Do you agree?
No, I guess I don't agree. I think the problem is that the law, which reflects pre-9/11 circumstances, is not necessarily appropriate for post-9/11 security threats. I think one useful way to think about this is imagine there's a CIA agent somewhere who's interrogating somebody. He wants to know that he's not going to be prosecuted and thrown in jail if he does certain things. And he's just told, well, you're not allowed to torture, or you're not allowed to engage in cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. That's not really very good guidance. And so now it's true he might know that there's such a thing as a necessity defense. It's highly unlikely that it would apply in such a situation mm-hmm. as this, though. There are other sorts of defenses that are available. But I think what the administration was concerned about from the beginning was that these agents would be afraid to act in an appropriate way unless they had clear legal guidance.
And the country would be, the security would be paralyzed there. Juliet, I hear you.
Well, yeah, can I pick up on that, though? But Professor Posner is assuming that before they actually knew what to do. And I think given the fact that it's clear they didn't know what they were allowed to do in terms of interrogations, because all sorts of bad things were happening that no one applauds or approves of, such as at Abu Ghraib. Professor Posner sort of is assuming that they knew before the McCain Amendment or the torture amendments. And also on the Patriot Act, and the pre-9/11, the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act wiretaps that we're talking about, mm-hmm. there were amendments in the Patriot Act to FISA to make it easier to share intelligence information with law enforcement agencies. So to be told now, well, that wasn't enough, and that's why the president needed to authorize the NSA to go ahead and basically, you know, eavesdrop on American citizens or on American communications, I sort of scream foul here. You know what I mean? Mm. We changed it. If it wasn't
I don't want to jump to conclusions on the basis of the New York Times article that appeared this morning. It's impossible to tell from the article what the reasons were. They quote some sources saying that if they wanted to follow lots of people at the same time because the computers were processing numbers, they didn't have time to go to the judge. I just don't know whether those arguments are valid or not. But I disagree that what the president did was unprecedented or unusual. This is what presidents always do during wartime. And what the real debate is whether we're in a war or not.
Right. Yes.
Now, I'm not sure whether we are now, but I think shortly after 9/11 and in the following year or two, it was plausible to think that the president would have to act on his own to some extent against this nebulous foreign power, and that it wouldn't necessarily be sufficient to rely on existing statutory authorities. And it wouldn't necessarily be correct to go to Congress any more than it would be to go to Congress for guidance in an existing war.
But doesn't that nebulous duration give you pause that we could be, could have tiptoed into something that could last forever or for a very long time here? Because it's not like a conventional war, that it might involve a perpetual surrender of liberties.
Well, all wars, when they begin, no one knows when they're going to end.
Yes, so but isn't you got to concede this is different. This is not like battlefield arrays. The battlefield is empty. The war's over.
Well, I think it's more like the Cold War, which the U.S. fought against the Soviet Union through various proxies. But I'm not. I don't think I disagree with you as much as you think, Tom. I think that as time passes and it becomes clearer that there's no longer a threat, if such is the case, it's perfectly appropriate for Congress to step in. And I would expect even the executive branch not to insist as much on having these powers. I just think it's too soon to make that conclusion. I don't think that if we decide today, 4 years after 9/11 or more, that it's too soon to make the conclusion. We're barred from coming to this conclusion in another 2, 3, or 5 years. And I do think that having continued sunset clauses on the Patriot Act is sensible for this reason.
Mm. Juliet Keim, are we in too great a rush here?
Oh, no. I mean, I think that the original sunset provisions on the Patriot Act were an appropriate time frame because no one knew. I mean. When we passed the Patriot Act, Iraq wasn't even in our discussion, which
right.
is now being subsumed into the war on terror. So I think that the amount of years was appropriate at that stage. I think that to have this debate is at the right stage. And I think Professor Posner and I may agree on this. I'm not a huge fan of the McCain bill either. I think it's
why
it's probably too weak. I mean, it has no enforcement mechanism. It has no cause of action for those who would be penalized. It has no reporting requirements, so we have no idea what's going on. And the truth is, as I think Professor Posner would say, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment is like, pornography. So you know it when you see it. But I think what's important about the McCain bill is that it is the first time that Congress has sort of stepped up to the plate and said, it's sort of a line in the sand, and I think that's why the administration was against it, given the fact that many people believe it's not a very strong law, that Congress has finally spoken on one of the key issues that have animated this public debate, whether it's detention, interrogation, surveillance. We'll probably see more of it, and the administration clearly didn't want that, did not want, even though you and I can, everyone can find faults with the legislation, didn't want that line in the sand to be crossed.
May not be that firm a line, but the blank check era may be closing. Maybe another barometric reading that is underway, maybe underway right now as we speak.
Yes.
It's been a fascinating conversation. Juliet Keim at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, thank you very much for being with us, Juliet. And Eric Posner, law professor at the University of Chicago, joining us this hour from Chicago. Professor Posner, thank you so much for being with us.
Nice to be here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.